to a useless hunk of iron and steel. Pressurized steam spewed from hydraulics sheared from their couplings, and rivet heads burst from their bucks. Still, the ironclad didn't budge, its feet arcanely cemented to the ground by Jakes's spell. Jakes's mind reeled in agony for the warjack. Though the ironclad possessed no sense of pain, it was keenly aware of its condition, and the crippling blow shocked and enraged its primitive consciousness. It roared from within its armored hull and shook its head side to side furiously. Huddled behind the jack, Jakes trembled, hoping her own connection would hold out just a little longer. Leaning on his lightning rod for support as he trudged up the hill, Whisker heard the crash in the canyon behind him. Though it was loud enough to rattle his bones, he dared not waste a second to look back. Either Lieutenant Jakes was making good on her plan, or they'd all be dead shortly. He preferred the surprise either way. He gripped the cramp in his side, wobbling with dizziness, his senses swimming. If he'd had to deliver his message verbally, he would have never been able to get the words past his sputtering coughs. Fortunately, that wasn't his mission. Cresting the top of the hill, he could see the battle raging in the valley below. Clear lines had been drawn, the field controlled by one or the other army in various places, depending on the concentration of warjacks and the presence of a warcaster. Though the Protectorate force remained on the defensive and continued to take heavy casualties under the artillery fire, their intertwined layers of protective wards and arcane resistance had ensured their defeat would be slow and costly for the Signarans. Whisker eagerly thumbed a switch on his staff, and the silver gyrosphere at the top began to spin on its vertical axle. Light pulsed within the small storm chamber, energizing an array of mechanical coils that curved around the sphere. Whisker grinned with excitement as glowing blue tendrils sizzled around the apparatus. A gray broom materialized in the clear sky above, rotating in a spiral like a flat cyclone. It coalesced into clouds, thick and dark, a miniature storm crackling with electricity. From a clasp at his waist, Whisker removed a device that looked like an oversized pocket watch. On its face, an arrangement of gauges and meters twitched and spun chaotically. But to the Stormsmith, the meteorospecs communicated a sublime level of information about atmosphere quality, electrostatic accumulation, and the conductivity of surrounding elements. Every storm he'd ever summoned was delightfully unique, but after only a brief glance at the face of the specs, Whisker calculated an incomprehensible convergence of elements, and with his lightning rod summoned a lightning bolt to strike the ground 50 feet away, directly in front of him. Directly in front of him. In seconds, the gyrosphere had recharged the man-made storm hovering above him, and Whisker called a second bolt, this time closer to his own position. The third bolt struck, quite intentionally, exactly 1 foot in front of the stormcaller. His shock of white hair instantly straightened into a frizzy cloud over his head, and his lips parted to reveal his gleaming white overbite.
"Electrifying," he said, ticking rhythmically. "Again."
The warcaster monk known as High Allegiant Amanadraza had not given ground easily, but Sturgis finally had him on the run. Amon's arcane ability to navigate warjacks through the harsh terrain had made him the likely choice to lead the supply column through the crag. Sturgis had anticipated this and prepared by requisitioning every stormcaller available in Fort Fox Garrison. His strategy depended on their disruptive capabilities to mitigate Amon's well-known effectiveness for commanding large numbers of warjacks in battle. The strategy had proven out, but had cost Sturgis 2 warjacks in the process, and he found himself wishing for more stormsmiths at his disposal. The sudden burst of consecutive lightning strikes behind his force reminded him why he was currently a smith short. Ordering his ranks of stormblades to press their attack, Sturgis paused briefly, confused by the repeating series of lightning strikes that seemed to be concentrated on the hill directly to the rear of his artillery. Using a small collapsible spyglass taken from his belt pouch, Sturgis spotted Whisker alone on the hill, calling 1 bolt after another. Though storm callers were notorious for being a little mad, even unstable, Sturgis knew instantly that this was a calculated attempt to draw attention. Without Sturgis's strength, the Signaran force risked losing their hard-fought gains in this battle, but his instinct compelled him. Quickly, Sturgis summoned a nearby trencher.
Get this message to Captain Darius. Hold the line. You have command.
The trencher snapped his hand to his helm, then ran off like a shot. Blue paint cracked, curled, and blackened as the Judicator doused Bunker's armored carapace with flame. Jake's huddled low in the ironclad shadow, overboosting her power field while intermittently patting out flames that ignited her cloth or leather. She spoke to Bunker, soothing the battered machine like one might comfort an ailing loved one, a loved one with no hope of pulling through.
Just hang in there, Bunker. Stay with me. I'm right here.
With a clang, a glancing blow from the Judicator bent one of the ironclad smokestacks awkwardly to the left. The next two punches missed their target as Bunker narrowly ducked under one and barely managed to partially deflect another with its hammer.
That's it, Jake urged. Just a little longer.
Then the Judicator's eyes flared, and Jake knew the Harbinger still had control of it. Rippling with arcane energy, the Colossal pounded its fist down on Bunker. Bunker shifted to the side but refused to give ground. The fist, nearly as tall as Jake's, smashed into the ironclad's left leg, caving it inward. The smaller warjack vented steam in a mechanical moan as its knees buckled and it shifted its weight to the undamaged right leg. Still, the Judicator had not gained ground toward its controller. Blue runes continued to encircle Bunker and Jake's. Her physics-defying spell kept the warjack rooted in place. So long as it did not fall, the Colossal would not pass. Glancing back down the canyon, Jakes could see her trencher companions leading the zealots farther away, increasing the distance between them and the Judicator.
Just a little longer, she whispered.
Though it might cost her a warjack, or even her own life, Jakes would soon make the Harbinger choose. Her mission, or her men. Using their range to their advantage, Hollings and his soldiers drew the zealots through the canyon. The Harbinger continued to infuse the fanatics with her faith-fueled power, but by the time those within her area to effect reached the trenchers, her holy enchantments had expired. From there, skilled Signaran marksmanship and bayonet strikes thinned the ranks.
"Dig deep, gravediggers!"
he bellowed before firing another shot. The challenge inspired his men, and many responded with their own battle cries. More importantly, it kept them together as a cohesive unit, tied to Hollings by the sound of his voice. Private Hammond had fallen, but Hollings was fairly certain he'd seen the man crawl to cover and hoped his wounds were not fatal. His boys were hard as nails, and it took more than a rusty club to put one down. Even with the high casualties they were inflicting on the zealots, though, the diminishing squad of trenchers was now six against dozens. Then the Harbinger appeared to have reached her limit of her men's suffering. She called her zealots back to her, declaring their valor and righteousness and denigrating the Signaran dogs as unworthy of their attention. Too soon, Hollings thought. Even from here, he could still see Lieutenant Jakes and the ironclad jamming the massive Colossal up in the canyon, just as she'd said she would. But if his men couldn't pry the Harbinger out of range of the Judicator, the sacrifice of the lieutenant and her warjack would be for nothing. Plugging another round into his rifle, Hollings called out to his men, "Gravediggers, prepare to charge!" He snapped the breech closed, secured the lock, and yanked back the firing pin. After silently counting off the necessary seconds to be sure every man was locked and loaded, Hollings gave the order, "Charge!" The squad sprinted forward, every trencher firing on the run. Zealots fell before them, and others braced to receive the assault. The Harbinger's patience finally broke. She cried out to her acolytes, spurring them forward through her haphazardly arranged followers toward the onrushing trenchers. With an explosion of glowing runes, A pillar of light engulfed her, illuminating the ground in a circle around her. The pillar grew, expanding a shimmering wall of brilliance that passed harmlessly through the zealots. But poor Olson, who had outpaced the other trenchers, ignited like parchment held to a flame the moment he ran into the glowing veil. Hollings didn't have to call off the charge or give the order to retreat. The remaining trenchers halted mid-stride, shielding their eyes from the intensifying light, and bolted back the way they had come. Hollings's heart ached for Olson and his other fallen lads, but as he turned his back on the Harbinger, he knew she had finally taken the bait. One moment, the Judicator's eyes were blazing with white light. The next moment, they dimmed to the dull glow of a warjack without a master. The Harbinger had moved too far, and her connection with the Judicator had been stretched too thin. Jakes might have shouted for joy if Bunker hadn't been mangled beyond recognition. Now she just had to make sure the connection wasn't reestablished. Leaping from behind the ironclad's battered hull, Jakes raised her hand cannon and fired a shot straight up into the colossal's grill. The shot barely scratched the massive warjack's finish, but it was enough to distract the machine as Jakes took several quick steps toward the top of the hill, luring the colossal away from the Harbinger. As she moved, Jakes wove a spell to increase the warjack's speed. The runes that had encircled Bunker evaporated as Jakes cast the newer spell. "Come on, you junk heap!" she yelled to Bunker. "You've still got one good leg. Move!" Focused on the warjack, Jakes impelled it with her spell to follow her, much faster than it appeared capable of in its damaged state. The Judicator swiped at the ironclad, but only managed to graze its boiler from behind. The ironclad stumbled forward, giving the colossal a small gain in distance. Wheeling 180 degrees, the Judicator set the ground ablaze under the ironclad. Jakes fired another shot from her hand cannon, nailing the Judicator just above its eye. "Pick on someone your own size, you whitewashed pile of scrap!" she shouted. With earth-shaking footsteps, it pursued. The Judicator moved cautiously, as if apprehensive. All the fury and battle lust of a warjack was there, but it seemed reserved or confused, torn between conflicting directives. With Bunker limping toward her, Jakes put another round in her pistol. "Don't be shy! Show us what else you've got!" Another futile shot at the Judicator, and the colossal accelerated its pace, huffing steam and belching smoke and fire from its stacks. And then, much to Jakes's consternation, the silos on its shoulder-mounted rocket pod snapped open. "Too much talking, Jakes," she said to herself, breaking into a run while focusing on Bunker to keep the warjack moving. A salvo of rockets burst from the Judicator's launch tubes with a hiss, but without the guidance of its warcaster, the wildly inaccurate missiles detonated around Jakes and Bunker, missing them with all but the heat from their blasts. Jakes grunted in relief at the close call, and risked a look back over her shoulder, just in time to see the Judicator's eyes flare with the contact of its warcaster. The Harbinger had re-established control over the colossal. Jakes's heart fell into the pit that opened in her stomach. And then her world exploded with thunder. The Judicator's head jerked to one side as a cannon round impacted its armored skull. Three more shells pummeled it in rapid succession, shearing armored plating off its giant steel skeleton. Searching ahead for the new threat, the Judicator had no time to react before two squads of mounted storm knights charged over the crest of the hill, their electro-lances crackling with energy. The storm lance's electrified assault scorched its hull as their mechanical weapons sheared armor off its frame, dealing the colossal a blow that damaged systems throughout its structure. The giant warjack staggered back, fighting to maintain its balance and reorient itself. Through the smoke spewed by its erupting furnace, the Judicator's eyes flickered, flashing brilliantly despite the severe damage. The Harbinger's connection was still strong. The colossal was still a threat. Focusing on the ironclad, Jakes commanded it to face the colossal and attack with every ounce of rage still stirring within its broken frame. Snorting furiously, Bunker spun as Jakes's channeled energy rippled down its arm, igniting the head of the Quakehammer with a blazing blue aura. With a single, mighty swing, the ironclad buried the hammer in the Judicator's core, sending a shockwave through the fractured hull that devastated whatever active systems remained. The Colossal reeled backward, metal screeching and groaning as it toppled over. Rock shattered under the weight of its wreck, crashing to the ground, a smoking mountain of twisted steel and iron. Finally, its eyes went dark. Jakes ran to Bunker's side and put a hand on its mangled arm.
"You did it,"
she said. The ironclad turned its head to see her and clanged softly in response. Two crews of trencher cannoneers pushed their heavy guns over the crest of the hill while the storm lances circled back, arranging themselves in a defensive line across the gorge. Beyond them, Jakes could see the Harbinger and her remaining cohort of zealots mustering for their next move. The tingling sensation down her spine alerted Jakes to a new presence. She turned to see her mentor materializing right behind her, the glowing runes of his spell still circling around him. Sturgis looked from Jakes to the crippled ironclad, to the wrecked Colossal, then back to Jakes again.
"This was unexpected."
Jakes's eyes narrowed.
"What?
That we ran into a Colossal, or that the Colossal is a wreck?" An air of urgency still surrounded Sturgis. He spared no time for banter. "Are you fit to fight?"
"Better than Bunker here. Did I mention the Floating Prophet?"
Jake said, pointing at the Harbinger and her cohort.
"We'll summon a mechanic for your warjack at once," Sturgis said, moving up to the line of storm lances for a better look at the Protectorate reserves.
Jake's had to jog to keep up with him, her nose wrinkling in irritation at the commander's matter-of-fact demeanor.
"I don't think she'd be a threat anymore. Not today."
"Explain," he said, peering through his spyglass at the Harbinger and her zealots.
"She's a perfectionist, sir."
Even as she spoke the words, the Harbinger raised her banner and signaled her cohort to withdraw into the crag. Just then, Jake spotted the trenchers climbing over the rim of the canyon to rejoin her. They had circled around the Harbinger's force, crossing the high ground to avoid another encounter. Jake grieved silently when she saw only six returning, with one, Hammond, she thought, being carried by two of his squadmates.
"Good," Sturgis said, stowing his spyglass. "I need you back on the front line. We have a battle to finish."
With a silent hand gesture, he ordered the storm lances to move ahead and began striding back in the direction of the Signarin force.
"Yes, sir,"
Jake said wearily, taking a labored breath before trotting after him. She jerked her head at Bunker, signaling him to come along, even as she wondered if the crippled Jack could make it to a mechanic before its motivators gave out.
"Thunder follows lightning, Allison,"
Sturgis said, his stoic tone momentarily replaced with warmth.
"You can count on it. Always."
Jakes lifted her chin confidently and fell into step beside her mentor.
"I know."
In the gray light before dawn, Jakes picked her way over blackened rocks and the smoldering remains of two white and gold warjacks. Hollings and three of his squad lingered nearby, vigilantly scanning the surroundings despite the hours that had passed since the few Protectorate survivors had fled the area. Making her way behind the boulder that had shielded her from the Repenter's flamethrower, Jakes knelt down next to the charred body of Private Benjamin Wallace. Gently, as if the boy were only sleeping, Jakes lifted his head and removed one of the bronze military identification badges from around his neck. With a silent nod from Hollings, two of the trenchers placed Wallace on a makeshift litter and set off on the long hike out of Careley's Crag. Jakes dropped the small metal disc into a pouch at her waist that contained several more just like it. She tilted her head back, blinking rapidly in a futile attempt to dispel the tears welling in her eyes. She walked briskly past Hollings, looking away to conceal her emotions.
"Double time," she said softly.
Though she knew the trenchers were at least as weary as she was, returning to Fort Falk was for her a matter of particular urgency. She would need a great deal more time for her prayers tonight.
Mercy and wrath. written by William Schick, and read by Mike Ortigo. Laren, Early Spring 608 AR. Initiate Tristan Durant looked upon the faces of the ragged group that stood assembled in the small square that lay within one of the Morrowind slums, built beyond the main walls of Laren. All were bundled as best they could manage against the chill of the still-fading Lilies winter. Though he stood before them, it was not he who held their attention, but another priestly initiate, whose thunderous baritone rang out across the square, saying, "You have all submitted to worship of the Creator, and from his temple you are granted protection and the essentials of life, which we have come once more to bestow upon you." Initiate Baden Ryan delivered the proclamation from atop one of the supply carts that the Protectorate priests had brought with them from the Temple of Cleansing. The trio of carts bore sackcloth and simple provisions that were to be provided to the people by the Sulminite Temple. Though Baden was the same age as Tristan, and had been inducted into the Sulminite priesthood at the same time, he delivered the church's rhetoric with a fiery confidence that belied his years. Tristan admired how easily Baden had adapted to the Sulminite faith, which was different in many respects from the tenets they had learned as Lelys Menites. "Yet despite this act of generosity, many among you have voiced dissatisfaction. Like spoiled children, you snub your noses at gifts at which you have little right." Baden fixed a fierce stare upon his audience. "You say that these gifts are not enough, that your flesh suffers the harshness of the cold, that your bellies ache with hunger. I tell you, these discomforts pale compared with the torments that await you in Urkane, should you find yourselves deemed unworthy to enter the city of man. The hellish winds of Urkane's spiritual wilds will flay the flesh from your bones. Your hunger pangs will be brutally eclipsed by the torment of being consumed and endlessly digested within the roiling guts of the devourer worm." Baden turned and motioned toward the upper level of Laren, a city built in three concentric circles, where a mighty cliff face dominated its eastern side. Each section was ringed by a massive stone wall erected to defend against invasion. The center ring, once the wealthiest, had been given over entirely to the Temple of Minoth and its priests, military officers, and associated temples and armories. "This great city, now the seat of the Protectorate of Minoth's Holy Northern Crusade, perfectly represents what awaits the faithful in Urkane. At its summit are the rewards that can be earned through true faith and obedience to Minoth. Your bare faith has earned you a place within Minoth's protection, but only true faith will see you worthy of being welcomed within the walls, there to receive his full blessings." Baden waited for several moments, letting his last words hang over his mock congregation. Finally, he opened his arms, palms facing up, giving the people before him the sign that they could come and claim their weekly allotment of provisions. "Come and receive the gifts of Minoth in his temple, unworthy of them though you may be." As the people lined up, other robed acolytes who had accompanied Baden and Tristan from the Temple of Cleansing began distributing the supplies. Though Baden's words rang true to his ears, Tristan could not shake a feeling of deep discomfort as he regarded the sallow-eyed people, their faces and bodies lean with hunger, who were barely sustained by the meager provisions the temple provided. Tristan had assisted in the distribution of goods to the faithful during his priestly training, but he had never been assigned to this newer refugee settlement established outside the city walls. The sight of these people brought back painful memories of the days when his family had been forced to flee their farm and make their way to Laren in the face of the Cadoran Empire's invasion of Lael, and of the faces of the other families who had fled with his own during that terrible time. He wondered if Baden, himself a refugee from a Lelys village that had fallen prey to Krix, shared any of his thoughts. These were their countrymen, after all, if not adherents of their faith. "So, are you enjoying your first visit to this nest of unbelievers and cast-offs?" Baden's voice snapped Tristan from his reflection, answering that question. "It gives me much to think about. You are blessed to be chosen for such work, brother," Tristan replied, sincerity evident in his voice. Baden scoffed. "I would rather have received the calling with which Minoth has blessed you. This battlefield is far from the glory I desire to earn in Minoth's name when the Harbinger saved me from the depredations of Krix. You shall fight heathens at the front of the armies of the faithful. You shall rain holy fire and righteous vengeance upon all who refuse to bow before the Creator. Baden turned and fixed Tristan with his fierce stare. Why did you insist on coming today? You've been excused from these duties in light of your eminent warcaster training. Tristan thought for a moment about Baden's question. He wasn't sure that he could truly explain why today, of all the days, since he had been removed from distribution duties, he had felt compelled to accompany Baden to these outer slums. He had always found great fulfillment in seeing to the needs of the people and providing for both their spiritual and physical needs. During his time as a refugee, he had often quoted passages from the Canon of the True Law to others among his party. Though his father had scoffed at his piety, telling him that words were a poor replacement for true succor, Tristan had seen the light that his preaching had brought back to the eyes of the downtrodden and hopeless. He had felt the spirit of Minoth flow within and through him. Realizing Baden was still waiting for an answer, Tristan simply told the truth. Because Minoth wished it. Baden's brow furrowed, but he said nothing. The pair turned back to observe the line of people in silence for several minutes. As he watched the acolytes carefully distribute the paltry amount of foodstuffs to each person, Tristan became acutely aware of the weight of a cloth pouch attached to his belt, which contained a healthy-sized loaf of bread and a hunk of aromatic cheese, leftovers from his morning allotment of food from the temple. It seems so little for these people to subsist on, Tristan said. They receive what gifts their faith earns them, Baden replied matter-of-factly. Tristan thought once more of the ample food offered to priests during mealtime at the temple. He had heard that the Northern Crusade had to be frugal with its provisions in order to support its army so far from protectorate heartlands, but he had never seen the priests suffer. As an initiate, he benefited from this preferred treatment as well. Certainly, it seems that we could provide more, he said. The suffering is good for them. The hunger in their bellies, the rough cloth upon their skin. Trials like these lead people to learn the rewards that devotion to Minoth brings. Baden looked at Tristan once more. For those who are open to his message, at least. He sighed. At first we saw many convert and abandon their worship of Moro to fully embrace the Creator. I fear there is little hope left that these might be redeemed. They remain unmoved, despite the lessons of suffering we use to forge their faith. Tristan scowled at Baden's boast. He could not help but wonder how many of those who had so readily embraced the Creator had done so simply to quiet the rumbling in their stomachs. Tristan watched as a gruff-looking man came up to the acolytes to receive his allotment. Their eyes met, and Tristan once again felt the weight of the food pouch at his waist. He thought once more of his time as a refugee. Perhaps a different tack is needed then. A farmer must often water his crop if he wishes it to bear fruit. Tristan moved toward the man who had caught his eye as he made his way away from the supply carts. Sir, wait for a moment. The man turned and assumed a glowering look upon recognizing Tristan's priestly attire. What do you want, priest? I have taken no more than the scraps you have provided. Tristan kept his expression warm. I wish only to speak with you. The man scowled. There's nothing I wish to talk with you about. Tristan nodded toward the radiance of Moro that hung about the man's neck. Openly wearing such a symbol might have caused him problems inside Laren's walls, but it was tolerated here in the slums. I disagree. I believe there is plenty for two men of faith to speak about. Tristan unhooked the food pouch from his waist and unfolded the cloth wrapping. Come, break bread with me, and let us discuss faith. The man's face remained stern, but Tristan could see the desire in his eyes as he looked at the food. What is your name, priest? Tristan Durant, and I am only an initiate. Yours? I am Arnold, he said at last. He motioned around to several people watching the exchange and the food Tristan had revealed. I am not the only one in need of conversation. Tristan smiled. Any who wish to sit and speak of faith are welcome to join us. I am happy to share what gifts Minoth has bestowed with all who will listen to his word. For a moment, Tristan thought Arnault was about to rebuke his offer, but at last he relented and said, "Very well. Let us sit and hear what you have to say." As Tristan went with Arnold and a small flock of others who had decided that the food he had to offer was worth the price of a few words, he could not help but feel satisfaction. He was sure that it would take many visits to deliver this dubious flock to Minoth. After all, the journey to the Creator took many steps along a difficult path. But Tristan looked forward to every single one. Late summer, 608 AR. Tristan regarded the courtyard of the Temple of Cleansing through eyes that were not his own. He was vaguely aware of a thin sheen of sweat beading across his brow. He realized that he could actually see himself standing within the courtyard in the corner of his vision. The experience caused a momentary sensation of vertigo, and he had to fight to maintain his connection with the Warjack, through whose eyes he currently saw the world. "Now concentrate. Feel the divine power of Minoth within you. Use his gifts to guide the Warjack. As you are an extension of Minoth's will, so is this machine an extension of yours." The voice of Tristan's mentor, Hierophant Ashad Dabir, sounded strangely distant, despite the fact that he stood not 3 feet away. Tristan's lips moved as he silently intoned a prayer to Minoth, the invocation helping him to concentrate on his connection with the powerful Warjack. Through that connection, Tristan could feel the strange pulse and rhythm of the machine's cortex, once impure Mechanica, that had been blessed and consecrated by priests of the Protectorate, within his own mind. It was like listening to the heartbeat of another living creature. He willed it to move toward the practice targets, reveling in the sensation as the iron construct strode forward, each step striking the ground with a sound like thunder. As the Warjack stepped within range of the targets, Tristan focused his will to begin the assault. Divine power welled within him and initiated the Warjack's strikes, and Tristan felt the expansion of steam-powered pistons and the thrum of servos and gears that made up the muscles and sinew of the sanctified construct, as if they were part of his own body. His task completed, he commanded the Warjack to return to him before allowing his consciousness to slip back into his body. Despite months of training, he had to fight back the waves of dizziness that accompanied the transition. Perhaps more unsettling was the fact that he could still feel the Warjack at the periphery of his mind. He had to be careful not to allow this secondary perception of the world to overwhelm him. At times, it was hard enough managing just the sensations that assaulted his own body. The machine's subtle but persistent mental presence was not unlike the experience of knowing you had forgotten something important but could not remember what that was. "You continue to improve," the Hierophant said. "Work remains to be done, but your progress is promising." Tristan bowed humbly, causing the Warjack to bow slightly as it responded to his unconscious suggestions. "All thanks to your teaching and Minoth's guiding hand." The Hierophant inclined his head slightly, and though his face was hidden beneath his priestly mask, Tristan could sense his approval. "If it were possible to make humility a sin, you would be the one to do so. There is no shame in acknowledging your strengths. It is your faith that earns you Minoth's favor, and it is you who controlled the Creator's gifts." "Point taken, Hierophant Tabir. You honor me." Tristan did not feel entirely worthy of the praise all the same. He still struggled with his lessons, and sometimes it was difficult to see the daily progress. Ashad clasped Tristan by the shoulder. "Come, Precept Yorn will be waiting to begin the day's martial lessons with you." The morning sun shone down onto the courtyard at the center of the Temple of Interdiction. The golden rays would be some of the last of the quickly fading Lely's summer. Tristan soaked in their pleasant warmth as the pair made their way to the martial practice yard on the other side of the massive temple complex. The sensation made him think of all the tasks he would normally be responsible for on his family's farm. The end of summer was actually one of the easier periods of the year. Food was plentiful, and everyone enjoyed a respite before the hard work of the harvest began and the harsh realities of winter set in. He felt a pang as he thought of the family he had left behind when he had entered the temple nearly 1 year ago. But those days were long past, ended by the occupation of Lael by its long-standing enemy, Kador, and then by the arrival of the Protectorate of Minoth's Northern Crusade. Tristan realized with surprising longing that it had been nearly 3 years since he had tilled the earth alongside his family. As Cador's army had rapidly overrun Lael's defenses, Tristan and his family had fled with so many others to the perceived safety of Laren, thus trading in the hard life of a farmer for the harsher life of a refugee. Yet even Laren's seemingly inviolable walls had offered little protection from the northern aggressors. As hard as the winters had been for Tristan and his family, they were nothing compared to the winter that followed within occupied Laren. The canon of the true law, however, taught that Minoth demands man to suffer so that he may learn the strength he needs to serve the Creator in Urkane. Tristan and his family had persevered, and as if in answer, Minoth had delivered them with the arrival of the Protectorate's Northern Crusade. Tristan had been there to witness the arrival of then-Grand Scrutator Severius. He watched as the Cadoran leaders willingly opened the gates of Laren to him, knowing him to be Menoth's will manifest upon Cain. And Tristan had watched, both awed and terrified, as the famed High Executioner Servath Resnik unleashed Menoth's vengeance against Colden Lord Volk Lazar when he refused to bow before the word of the Creator. Flames had consumed the Grey Lord, burning him alive while he hung on the rack. "Initiate." The soft voice of Ashad shook Tristan from his reflections just beyond the training ground. Though Ashad's face was hidden behind his golden mask, this close, the elder Idrian's eyes were still visible beneath. The two locked gazes, and Ashad's deep brown, gold-flecked eyes stared with unsettling intensity into Tristan's pale blue orbs as if taking careful measure of his student's soul. "Minoth will that your morning prayer has cleansed your soul for the day's trials. You must trust that the path you walk is the one he has chosen for you, no matter how difficult the journey." Tristan looked quizzically at his mentor, unsure of the reasons for Ashad's sudden concern for his piety. "I do not fear the challenges he places before me. I know he has provided me the gifts to overcome them. Minoth's will guides me today as all days, Harifan." Ashad nodded as if satisfied with the answer. "As he guides us all." Tristan felt Ashad's hands upon his shoulders as the elder Idrian straightened him. "Remember this." Tristan nodded in acquiescence. He had never doubted the path he walked. He had known all his life that he was meant to serve Minoth. Since his youth, Tristan had been able to see the signs, visions, and dreams from the Creator that guided him and commanded his actions. Those signs had led him to the door of the Minite priest who served his farming community, prompted him to learn to read and write so that he might absorb the canon of the true law, guided Tristan and his family to Laren, insisted he be at the city gates to witness the arrival of the Northern Crusade. It had been there, Tristan realized, it was the Sul Minite faith in which Minoth wished Tristan to serve. It had been Minoth's will that his father had denied his joining the priesthood in his youth. Master and student made the last leg of the walk to the practice circle where Precept Yorn waited.
"Initiate,"
Yorn said as he bowed in greeting. Despite the fact that Yorin was by far Tristan's senior in both experience and length of service, even the lowest priestly rank demanded the veteran Flame Guard's deference.
"May Minoth's strength be with you for today's lessons."
The precept extended Tristan's bladed staff toward him. As Tristan grasped the soft leather-bound haft of his weapon, he felt a familiar warmth rush through his arm. His hand tightened around it instinctively at the feeling, and Tristan summoned a small portion of his divine might and channeled it into the holy weapon with which he enjoyed a mystical bond. The staff had been forged by the vassals of Minoth, every hammer blow upon its red-hot steel consecrated with the prayers of a Minite priest. It had been tempered in Minoth's fury and blessed by Visgoth Ark-Rezek himself. Even the soft, supple leather wound about the handle was inscribed with passages from the canon of the true law. It was a weapon worthy of the Creator, a weapon Tristan knew in his heart he was not yet worthy to wield.
"Are you prepared?"
Yorin asked, hefting his own spear and assuming a fighting stance. Tristan nodded, grasping his weapon in a two-handed grip and leveling the bladed end toward Yorin as the precept had taught him. Tristan worked to calm his mind, clearing it of all distractions.
The almost meditative state Ashad had taught him to connect with and to use to control warjacks also served perfectly for martial combat. Yoren attacked with a shout, his spear striking like a viper. Tristan used his own weapon to deflect the strike and dashed to the left, away from Yoren's spear. The flame guard precept anticipated the move and spun around, swinging his spear in a whirling arc toward Tristan's exposed head. Tristan barely had time to bring his own weapon up to block. Pain shot through his arm as the weapons connected, and the force of Yoren's blow drove him off balance. Yoren was upon him in a flash, his spear flashing in a flurry of lightning-fast strikes. It took all Tristan had to ward off each attack. In no time, his muscles began to burn, and he felt sweat pouring down his face from the exertion. Sensing the flow of the fight slipping from him, Tristan took a chance and rolled past Yoren's last strike and into the Precept's guard. Here, Tristan had the advantage, as his own weapon, which was more akin to a halberd than a spear, could be used in a chopping or slashing attack. Tristan felt a surge of adrenaline as he used the momentum of his spin to sweep the butt of his weapon across Yoren's legs, knocking the Precept to the ground. Tristan leveled his weapon at the downed Precept. "Again?" he asked, between heavy breaths. Though he was proud of his accomplishment, no hint of it showed in his voice. Tristan knew his victory was possible only because of Yoren's teaching and the divine gift with which Minoth had blessed him. Without them, Yoren was by far the more skilled warrior.
"Yes,"
a baritone voice rang out, its gravity causing Tristan to shrink involuntarily.
"But this time you shall face me."
Terror, primal and instinctive, gripped Tristan's heart. He knew that voice. It belonged to the same man who had meted out Severius's judgment to Colden Lord Volk Lazar. Tristan looked up and felt a shiver run down his spine as his eyes took in the awe-inspiring figure of High Executioner Servath Resnik. The man stood nearly half again as tall as Tristan, the mighty pauldrons of his heavy, ornate armor reminding Tristan of the steeples of the grandest Minite temples. The two great smokestacks rose from his back, sending wisps of ash-gray smoke twisting into the air above his towering form. A series of chains about his waist held gilded scroll tubes and brass incense canisters similar to those Tristan had seen hanging from Sulminite racks. Despite that imposing panoply, however, it was the massive broadsword upon which Resnik rested his right hand, its leaf-like dual points driving into the earth, that dominated Tristan's attention. To his amazement, the sword was as tall as the warcaster who wielded it, a fact that seemed impossible. But then, nothing about the man who stood before him seemed possible. He watched the huge warcaster heft the mighty sword, an act that seemed to require barely more effort than lifting a feather, and stride into the circle.
"High Executioner, do you really believe that necessary?" Ashad asked.
Tristan turned, eyes blinking in shock at the lack of surprise in Ashad's voice. He slowly realized Ashad had known the High Executioner would be here today.
"You believe him to be ready for the next stage of his training, Harifan. I wish to test that assertion."
Tristan detected no derision in his reply to Ashad's question. The High Executioner simply wanted to put Tristan to his own evaluation.
"I will not hold back, Initiate, and I will not tolerate you doing so either,"
the imposing warcaster said. Tristan nodded, his hands tightening in a white knuckle grip around his blessed weapon as he moved into a fighting stance. The first attack came without warning, the executioner moving faster than Tristan would have thought possible, given his massive frame and heavy plate. Tristan desperately tried to dodge the attack, but the warcaster's reach was far too great. His staff was nearly ripped from his grasp as the mammoth sword connected with it. Tristan tried to move with the momentum of the blow, but his stumbling maneuver left a clear opening. Before he could recover, his opponent was there. Through frantic effort alone, Tristan raised his weapon in a last-second parry. The strength behind the High Executioner's attack thundered through Tristan's body, making his arms sting before going numb. Too slowly, Tristan tried to respond to the onslaught, but he knew he was desperately outmatched. Pain lanced through his leg as the flat of the Warcaster's blade struck him, knocking him onto his back. Fighting to ignore the bolts of agony that lanced through his leg, Tristan forced himself to his feet. No sooner had he resumed his fighting stance than Resnick was on him again. Stars exploded across his vision as the pommel of the High Executioner's blade crunched into his jaw, knocking him once more to the ground. Tristan tasted the coppery tang of blood as it mixed with the dirt in his mouth. Head swimming, he fought his way unsteadily back to his feet. He resumed his fighting stance, drawing upon the last of his inner reserves to gather himself to meet the next attack. He did not have long to wait. The executioner's sword flashed in his sight, and Tristan felt his weapon torn from his numbed hands. He had little time to worry about the loss, as a mailed fist slammed into his chest, catapulting him off his feet and sending him sprawling once more into the dirt. Blackness crept into his vision as he fought to find the wind that had been knocked out of him. His head rang and his jaw ached. With great effort, he rolled onto his hands and knees. He silently called on Minoth for strength and tried to push himself to his feet despite the pain and disorientation. He almost got his hands off the ground before he collapsed, his body simply giving out as his lungs burned for breath.
"Stay down, and it all ends, Initiate,"
the High Executioner said. His voice showed no sign of exertion from their duel. Tristan wanted to do nothing more than stay down, to simply let unconsciousness take him and end the agony racking his body. But he remembered the Executioner's orders. Hold nothing back. Clarity cut through the haze of pain, like a ray of sun through morning fog. Very slowly, Tristan rose to his feet through the torment. Resnick stood before him. Though Tristan could not see the man's face behind his helm, he could feel the eyes of the High Executioner upon him. He could feel the weight of their judgment. Tristan tensed for the next blow. But the Warcaster simply stood there, still as a statue. Finally, he said,
"I hope your faith in Minoth is stronger than your sword arm, Initiate."
He paused as if considering something before continuing.
"Your real training begins tomorrow."
With that, he turned to go. Tristan refused to let his body collapse back onto the dirt until the only sight that remained of the Warcaster was the thin trail of smoke issuing from his armor. Tristan walked slowly through the halls of the Temple of Cleansing, every movement lighting his nerves afire from the beating Resnick had given him. He desperately wanted nothing more than to collapse on his bed and pass into the black void of sleep. Yet, however much his body desired it, other matters required his attention. Step by painful step, Tristan made his way to one of the many chapels scattered throughout the Temple of Cleansing. Pushing his way through the heavy, ornate doors, Tristan was instantly greeted by the heavy scent of holy incense and the tang of the rich unguents that were used to sanctify the skin of the faithful. Tristan looked about the room, the familiar sights and smells helping to ease the pain that tormented his body, though it was the turmoil within his soul he felt most acutely in the moment. Tristan did not fear pain. The canon of the true law stated that suffering was simply another way in which Minoth shaped men into worthy servants. No, what Tristan truly feared was that he would find himself unworthy of the great gifts Minoth had bestowed upon him. His only desire was to serve his God's will. Nothing else mattered. He could not, however, shake the doubt that lingered in his mind in the aftermath of his beating. Despite all of Tristan's preparations, despite his fervent belief, Resnick had stripped away everything he thought he had mastered. It had been all too simple for the faith gained through steadfast prayer and the combat skill achieved through continual instruction to be undermined by one fateful altercation. The reliable, focused connection he usually enjoyed with the divine power within him had been drowned out by the physical agony that pulsed ceaselessly in his body. Worse was the echoing doubt that had resurfaced within his soul about the path the temple had chosen for him. When he had finally mustered the resolve to leave his family behind, despite his father's stern objections, Tristan had resolutely maintained that the decision was a reflection of Minoth's will.
His conviction had made the heartbreak of his father's condemnation and the tears of his sisters bearable. The lessons passed on by the Sulminite priests during his indoctrination had resonated with Tristan. Even as a young man, he had believed something to be lacking in the execution of faith among the Lely's priests he had spoken to. It was too loose, too much based on individual interpretation of the canon of the true law. Such disorganization of belief was not indicative of the Minith Tristan knew from his holy readings. It was not fitting of the creator of man, who had bestowed such awe-inspiring gifts as the wall, the flame, the sheaf, and the law. The Sulminite faith seemed to have resolved all these incongruences. Yet, though he completely subscribed to Sulminite doctrine, he still found himself questioning much about what the priests and Minoth had chosen for him. Questions his first meeting with Resnik had only put into more stark relief. He heard a familiar voice behind him.
"You look terrible, brother."
Tristan turned to face Baton, the action causing him to wince. Speaking through a flare of pain in his bruised jaw, Tristan said, "As terrible as my flesh looks, it is my resolve that I fear has taken the true beating today. I wonder if I'm up to the task set before me." "I have always admired the constancy of your faith, my friend, but I understand your meaning. This was not where I believed my path to lie. When the Harbinger herself arrived at my village, at the head of a mighty host of the Northern Crusade, set to deliver us from the Crixian horrors, I felt the faith within me stir like never before. I was not alone. I know you have never seen her, but believe me when I tell you that to behold her countenance is to look upon a fraction of Minoth's divine being." A sorrowful smile crossed Baden's lips as he continued. "She chose me, Tristan. She looked deep into my soul, despite her blindness, and she chose me. She believed I might have the spark. You have no idea what that was like. The pride I felt to believe that Minoth might have chosen me to be one of his rare war casters." Tristan looked at his friend in surprise. He had always known Baden yearned to be a warcaster, to bear the same gift that he himself had. But he had not known the Harbinger had marked him as a potential for that path. Baden continued, "I was not the only one, of course. She marked 15 who might have the potential. Of 3, she was certain. I was not one of the 3, but still I hoped. One of those special few, Leon, was a friend of mine. He was sent south to train to be a warcaster like you. Others have joined the choir." He paused again, turning his eyes to the minifix that rested at the front of the chapel. "Though I held Minoth's grace within me, he did not see fit to bless me with the spark. I was denied the chance to save others as the Harbinger had saved my village, to visit righteous vengeance upon those who dared act against Minoth and his faithful. Instead, I learned that my path was to be one of the Creator's simple priests, to tend to the spiritual needs of his flock." Baden turned to look into Tristan's eyes. Despite his story, Tristan saw neither jealousy nor judgment. "I look at you, at the way your faith pours from you and into others, such that even non-believers are seemingly humbled by it, and I wonder how I might ever succeed at the calling Minoth has for me. My heart still burns for battle, to join the great crusade on the front lines, even though I know that is not the role chosen for me. I think I would be happier on your path." Tristan could hear the longing in Baden's voice as he spoke of battle, of being a warcaster. "Minoth tests us all. Happiness does not strengthen the soul," Tristan said. Now he was the one to gaze at the minifix. "I have always felt so sure about the road Minoth wished me to walk." His words hung in the air, his doubt unspoken. Baden placed a hand on his shoulder. "You're not alone, Tristan. We all question our paths. This is the lesson the Creator has taught me. How can we not? But we must remain confident that the difficulties Minoth places before us, doubt, fear, disappointment, are there only to be overcome by our faith. And in so doing, we become better servants of his will, even if servitude is not what we wished for ourselves." Tristan nodded at the wisdom of his friend, a man whose only desire had been to stand where Tristan stood now, and who in turn stood where Tristan wished to be. Tristan bowed his head
and said a silent prayer of thanks to Minoth for his guidance. Though his doubt remained, Tristan resolved to endure whatever his path would bring, in service to the Creator. Tristan knelt in prayer to Minoth as he awaited the arrival of the High Executioner. He shifted his jaw unconsciously, a dull ache reminding him of the previous day's encounter. The pain that remained was a shadow of what it might otherwise have been. After he had left the chapel, a shot had sought him out to mend many of Tristan's physical injuries through the use of his own divine skills. Had he not, Tristan was sure he would not have been physically able to rise for his first day of training. The Hierophant had warned him, however, that such intervention would not occur again unless at the direct command of Resnik. Tristan had inferred from their brief conversation, and his own brutal interaction with the Warcaster, that the High Executioner would never issue such a command. He looked out toward the sky, the three moons slowly fading from view as the first hint of the morning sun began to paint the coming dawn. He knew Minoth had set him upon this path, and so Tristan would serve until he could serve no more, or until Minoth summoned him to a new calling. The sight of Resnik approaching the practice field shattered his introspection. The Warcaster was flanked by two towering warjacks, their eyes glowing with power, thick black smoke churning from their bronze-capped smokestacks. Each stood more than twice as tall as Tristan. He recognized the one to the executioner's left as a Vanquisher, a massive flame belcher in its left hand, and an enormous morning star in its right. The warjack to the right showed a similar profile, but whereas the Vanquisher was produced in numbers for war, this warjack was a singular, holy tribute to it. Its right hand brandished the same morning star as the Vanquisher, but its left bore a gleaming sword inscribed with words in an ancient alphabet Tristan did not recognize. Even without being bonded to this warjack's cortex, he could sense its presence. Scourge of Heresy, Resnik's personal warjack, truly outshone the stories he'd heard of it. As the trio approached, Tristan noticed they were not alone. A group of acolytes, each bearing a bundle wrapped in holy cloth, followed just behind. Tristan felt curiosity stir within his mind as he tried to determine what they might be carrying. He bowed in respectful greeting as Resnik arrived. High Executioner, may Minoth's grace look upon you today. Resnik did not bother to acknowledge the greeting, instead motioning to the acolytes behind him. Today is the last day you arrive unprepared for war, Resnik said. At his signal, the men bowed and hurried forward toward Tristan. As they unwrapped their bundles, realization struck him. Each acolyte carried a piece of Warcaster armor. His Warcaster armor. Starting now, you will wear this armor at all times, except when I let you sleep. The acolytes tugged at Tristan as they fitted him with his new vestments, appointing him for war. Tristan soon noticed, much to his consternation, that the armor had seemingly been made for someone broader than he. It didn't fit. As the acolytes cinched the last of the straps to the limits of their tightness, Tristan finally said, "Your forgiveness, High Executioner, but this armor seems ill-fitting. I do not see how I will be able to properly fight within it."
"Then you must grow to fill it."
Tristan's brow furrowed slightly at the response, but he said nothing. Instead, he focused on adjusting to the sensations of his new armor. The weight, in particular, pressed upon Tristan in a way he had never expected. In fact, thinking back to how easily Resnik had moved during their battle, he was now even more impressed by the Warcaster's strength. His awe was further magnified by the fact that his own armor weighed only a fraction of the full plate the executioner wore, as naturally as a second skin. An acolyte worked behind Tristan to stoke the boiler that powered the armor's arcane turbine. As the fire began to burn fully, Tristan felt heat upon his back, even through the heavy, insulated robes that protected him. His arcane sense tingled as the armor came alive. Without warning, Resnik struck at him with a mailed fist, and Tristan was blinded by an intense flash as his Warcaster armor's power field absorbed the blow. Though he remained unharmed, Tristan could feel a decrease in the energy projected by the armor.
Just as your warjacks and blessed weapon are instruments of your will, so too is your armor. But where the former embody your wrath, the latter represents your life. If you hold any hope of serving Menoth's will upon the battlefield, you must learn to use each as naturally as you use the physical gifts the Creator bestowed upon you at birth. Resnick's fist struck again. This time Tristan heard a crack. An actinic smell assaulted his nostrils.